Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the main course on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Alexis McLaughlin, here with Philip Gilmore.
Good morning.
And we have back in the studio Patrick Martin.
Thanks so much for having me back.
We unbanned him.
I was temporarily banned, but when I heard who your guests were today, I figured I had to come back.
Oh, we got a great show. Today with us, we have Christina Lecky of The Breslin, and we also have Tucker Schwartz of Roberta's. Yay. And
morning. Hi.
We're going to be talking about food and stuff.
Yeah.
And things.
Happy Valentine's week. Yay.
Oh,
oh
no.
Yeah, that's happening.
You guys got a Valentine's Day card from some farmers, I heard.
Oh, little Joseph Hubbard Love,
yeah.
Our lamb farmer.
Who is Joseph Hubbard, by the way?
Joseph Hubbard is
a babe.
He's number one, a babe. And he's one of our lamb farmers out in Kansas.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're in Kansas,
he's like a young stud farmer, wow. Dude.
Rancher guy.
He's like mad young too, right?
Guys from Kansas are just the best.
He has a nice barn.
I was born in Wichita, by the way.
It's a really big barn. Sturdy.
Do you have a big barn, Patrick?
It's a high. It's a high barn.
A high barn.
I heard it was a little stunted, but...
So, do you guys have any plans for Valentine's Day?
No.
I'm working.
Are you guys doing a special menu for Valentine's Day?
We were going to, and then we lost some staff, so we kind of nipped it in the bud. But we are going to run some specials, and we always like to do, like... You know, like awfully, like, you know, heart and tongue and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, penis.
Yeah.
Specials.
The best parts.
Yeah.
We did kind of like at Momo Sushi Shack, we did like reservations only, all two tops, all tasting menu. And we had never really done that level of that many tasting menus all at once. So we thought, okay, there's, you know, there's 30... You know, two tops, so we can just do, and it just, you know, or 15 two tops, and yeah. It just didn't work out too well.
It's
we ended up comping
it gets
half
intense.
Of the entire night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we were
going to do that too. It's just, I mean, it's heavy.
It's so much running around. It's so many small tables. Everyone needs something. It's the volume is so much more increased.
Yeah, when you're a restaurant that doesn't normally do tastings, it's like it's a real thing, and your front of the house is not prepared for the level of, like, you know, it's a commitment issue, really.
Is Valentine's Day a depressing day for a lot of people, like New Year's Eve? Or it doesn't seem to be...
I think it's just amateur night.
It's amateur
night. Everyone goes out. Everyone feels obliged to do so. And
I'm kind of anti-holidays. I think every day should be Valentine's Day and every day should be birthdays. Yeah. Do you know Humphrey Bogart didn't drink on New Year's Eve? He drank like a fish the entire year, and he purposely didn't drink on New Year's Eve because that's the day that
everyone
did what he did normally. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Phil.
Oh, thank you so much.
Today's your birthday?
No. Day's my... Yeah.
Oh, every day.
Every day's your birthday, yeah.
Happy
New Year's.
Yes.
In 2 days, right?
How do you know that, Tucker?
I don't know. Internet,
stop,
probably.
Did you research?
My birthday in February as well.
What, are you an Aquarius?
I'm a Pisces.
A Pisces.
When's your birthday, Patrick?
February 10th.
Ooh, my mom's is the 16th.
Nice.
Have you ever read the birthday book? It's actually pretty spot on. It says I can eat whatever I want and that I'll be fine.
Yeah, that is a fact. That's a scientific fact.
Because I think that was the case with Roberta Flack or something, so I can do the same.
Great.
I was talking to Alexis earlier. If anybody doesn't have plans, the Fine and Raw Chocolate Factory is doing a big Valentine's Day party.
It benefits
my friend Hector's foundation called 108 Lives that supports orphanages in Kathmandu. So that's kind of it's kind of dear to my heart. I spent a couple of months over there.
How do you find out more information?
Like, I guess just Fine and Raw or 108 Lives. Yeah. It's kind of fun. They got some big DJs. We have Lauren Flax from Creep and my buddy Chufu who did the song at the beginning of the show. They're all going to DJ and lots of alcohol and free chocolate and stuff.
Do you see Fine and Raw from your apartment window?
Yep. I can see right inside. Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys tried Fine and Raw chocolate?
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah, Daniel's nice. He comes by and brings us chocolates at the office sometimes, like randomly.
Chocolate,
and he's also
chocolate
really
for
into
meat.
Offal.
Yes.
So he'll just like, you know, bring jars of like, you know, pate or whatever he's been making.
Aw.
So
You do a lot of offal at the Breslin?
A decent amount.
Yeah. What's your favorite dish?
Oh God.
Well, the terrine board is so good in general.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And that kind of encompasses most of the animal, which is kind of nice, which we get from Heritage.
Actually, yeah.
They're really pristine. They're...
Actually, yeah, Heritage, you know, the Goat-tober month, we got in, you know, started getting in whole goats, and it's been like, what, year four now, and we were left with all the, you know, bits and parts, and me and my chef kind of came up with a offal gyoza. So
nice.
We did, it's kind of based on haggis, and then we took all of the stuff and grinded up with a little pork belly fat and rosemary almonds and dates and, you know, some Moroccan lamb spice, and then make little meatballs and put them in gyoza. They're so good.
You put everything in those dumplings. You bring in literally whole animals and break them down and put them in like a million dumplings.
Stuff them in dumplings. Yeah.
We actually have a 500-quart Vitamix, and then we just actually
the whole
just shove,
animal
yeah,
just
shove
goes
them,
in,
you know.
And then dumplings come out.
Speaking of goat, Alexis launched a campaign for this week because for Heritage Foods mail order, saying that it's the year of the goat. So I looked on the internet. It's the year of the sheep.
All right. So how this works.
I love your infographic, but it just might be wrong.
I'm pretty sure they're the same animal.
Well, that's the thing. In the translation, I guess the Chinese word for sheep is synonymous with lamb, ram, and goat. So it's all this. It's, you know, the same animal kind of represents the one zodiac symbol. Patrick's been telling me I've been wrong all week. You know, Adidas is actually doing a Year of the Goat big promotion.
Could they be wrong as well?
No. Adidas is never wrong.
I mean, they are German.
They're German. They're always the right.
Boo.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you're right. Anne was convinced it's just not the Year of the Goat. It's the ram, and that a male goat is a buck.
There's a lot of... There's... I mean, it's the same word. We're taking a little liberties. We love goat. It, you know, goat's there.
She's just trying to promote some, trump up some extra business for y'all, you know, like don't.
Nothing
you know.
To do with marketing, just, you know, genuinely excited. moving animals nose to tail.
And your burgers and dog campaign, your hot dogs and burgers, is not surf and turf. I just want you to know you had some problems with that. There was nothing surf about that.
Well, the dogs, when you cook them in water,
when
I thought
that
that was...
you cook them in seawater.
Yeah.
Boiled in seawater.
That brings the surf.
Yeah.
To the component.
Speaking of meats, I see the two Dans who own and run the meatball shop empire sitting outside reading our lips, listening to the show.
Oh. Are they really here?
Yeah, they're right there.
And they're waving.
And they're waving.
We've been spotted.
They're like, from what we can read on the lips... Great show so
far. Are they stalking us? We just had Daniel Sharp on the show 2 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Must have been very good.
He was so great.
He's just trying to get back in the studio. Make his way in.
Christina, are you in charge of any of the desserts at the Breslin?
Not really. No, I have an amazing pastry chef.
Because every once in a while, I'll see a dish. I'll read about a dish, and it makes me angry. Like I think the about 10 years ago, I forgot who was doing it, but somebody was doing a BLT, but with fried green tomatoes, and it just made me so angry that I didn't think of that. But I kind of got a little bit of that when I was reading about the ants on a log.
Oh yeah,
the peanut butter mousse with a celery sorbet, raisin and pretzels. I just read that. And I just
which
went,
a lot
God
of
damn it.
Telling April about that dish was kind of funny because she was like, she like had no concept of Ansel Noalgo. And actually, that's a so lot American. Of people didn't, you know, like, I feel like my pastry chef is like Midwestern.
Yeah.
And, you know, for her, it was like such a childhood memory.
Like,
know?
I don't even have to taste it. I've already tasted it.
Yeah.
And I think the key with Ansel Noalgo, too, is you use room temperature peanut butter and then really cold celery.
Yeah.
That's what put it to me. I'm like, sorbet.
Yeah. You know?
Oh,
that's
it
good.
Sounds so good. How do you do the pretzels, out of curiosity?
The pretzels are just finely ground, and then we roll, so like the peanut butter mousse log is like rolled into the pretzels.
Hold on one second. I'm gonna text my chef so we can do that tonight. Okay, so
you grind the pretzels.
Oh, hold on. Here. Can you repeat that?
Christina, you and Tucker actually know each other from the Breslin, because
yeah.
you guys are friends in real life.
It's
we
true.
We are friends in real life. Yeah, we worked together for a long time at both the John Dory and the Breslin.
Yeah, Tucker was my kitchen manager. She would sit in my office and our office, not mine.
You guys met there, though? You didn't know each other before?
No.
No.
But we're also neighbors now, so our friendship has blossomed since.
I try to move as close to Tucker as possible. If anybody follows her on Instagram, she posts epic home cooking photos. And yeah,
I don't know if you know this. Do you know Kip? Obviously,
yeah.
You know, I'm opening up a restaurant with Kip.
Yeah, I do know that.
And I was talking to him about you yesterday, and he said you are some sort of hell of a painter, an artist.
Well, not a painter per
and
se.
A sewer.
You're an artist. I'm sorry.
She's a Renaissance woman. Let's be clear. Let's not mix her title,
you guys.
So what kind of art do you do? I'm sorry you said painter, but...
No, it's fine. I studied photography, and hence I've sort of been taking that out on my Instagram account as of late. But I started, after I left school, moving more into doing 2D work with thread and fabric.
Wow.
So they're sort of drawings, but I sew them onto fabric.
Oh, wow.
They're very minimal. They're based on photographs I've taken. But yeah, and it's so funny because I did that my whole life, pretty much, or you know, since I've left school, my whole adult life, and I've had a little bit of a weird hiatus where I haven't had as much time to do it since I've been in New York, and just recently I've decided to start sharing them with people again. So
is it like hand sewn or machine sewn?
Machine sewn. Yeah, which is another weird obstacle because it's like two stitches, turn. It's like this very weird. It'd probably be easier, actually, to do it by hand. Maybe take longer. Actually, I don't know. It's both very time-consuming.
Is it on fabric or paper? I couldn't...
Fabric.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all on muslin, usually. I've done on canvas, too, and there was a brief spell of doing things on denim, but I got over that. Young. But, yeah. All sewn. And then I branched a little bit into doing some 3D work with just, like, got rid of the fabric altogether and just used thread and lots of, you know, strings and different things and making, I don't know, webs and nets and, I don't know, they're very abstract, very different than the other work.
I saw your work in, I guess, last month's Roberta's newsletter.
Correct.
And it was highlighted. It was awesome. It was really great.
You couldn't tell it was thread, though, just by the thing. I was like, oh, I like your painting. And she's like, that's all sewn stuff. I was like, wow, that's so interesting. Now, do you sell to galleries and stuff? I mean, is that part of getting serious about your art, is showing it in galleries?
Well, I did do that. I used to live in San Francisco before I moved to New York, and I worked with a gallery there that's handled all my work. And at this point, I've sold most of it. I have 4 pieces left, 2 of which are in a show in Norway right now, and 2 are in my apartment now. And again, I got sort of swept up into just re-entering the food world and living in New York, and my productivity has has lowered. But I have been doing a bunch of the weirder 3D stuff just in my apartment, but I haven't been showing them as much. But I have shown in New York, but that was all when I was still living in San Francisco. So I'm just trying to reawaken that part of me and figure out how to do it again.
And how does an artist decide what to charge for the art? Is there like a industry standard, or
kinda,
is it
yeah.
just how much time you spent on it, or how many ounces of thread you use?
It's not quite like
branding, food costing.
Or, you know, all the things I've done in the... It's not the same sort of commodity. There's a different sort of value system put on it. I pretty much deferred to my gallerist for that. I was notoriously bad at deciding on what things should cost and would always undervalue it, and he'd be like, no. And he would manage to get the right dollar amount, so it was nice, but... it's tricky.
Yeah. What cut does a gallery usually take?
50%.
Yeah,
wow. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a lot.
That is, yeah, that's pretty standard. And though, again, having been out of it for a little while, maybe it's even more dramatic than that. Or maybe, I don't know, it depends on how much exposure you have.
And I don't know if this is a good thread, if you will, but does the at the Breslin, I mean, how do you cost? Can you cost something out, a dish at $90 if you want, or is there just a rule, well, like nothing can cost more than $45?
I mean, we try to stick in like a 25% parameter, you know, like, you know, four times, you know, what the cost is. You don't, you know, you're definitely certainly not trying to gouge people. And then some dishes, you know, you want to use this amazing product, but you know, you can't charge $90, so you charge $75, and you don't really make your costs on it, but ideally your menu balances out with other things that you are making your costs on, or maybe making a little more than your costs, you know. It's kind of how it works for the most part.
I always imagine that that'd be a difficult part of, you know, being a chef, and especially when you get to your level, is now you have to integrate, you know, this business side of it, where before you were, you know, cooking in charge of food, but now you have to think of things like food cost and
it's a dicey balance, you know. So much of what we do wants to kind of just be super creative or, you know, tactile and like working with your hands, but, you know, a lot of it is computer work. It's kind of my weak point. That's why Tucker was so so and still is very vital. She's like the other half of me, the brains behind the hands.
Well, it's true, it definitely truncates a little bit what can be executed in restaurants, is not only the amount of labor and that goes into each dish, but the cost of each. I mean, you can't just be freewheeling and spending all, you know, on fancy ingredients all the time. Like it is a delicate balance.
Tucker, are you still doing, because now you're doing just like events and coordinating and curating for Roberta's, so I guess that's another kind of cost side where
I feel like in this role I'm seeing all sides. I have to still wrangle chefs to do food costing, in addition to all my own costing, for, you know, labor and all of our the whole like beverage side of things. I've got complete control over. I have more elements now to consider, and it's using the same skills, so it's been really useful, and I'm learning a ton. It's just more of the operations side of things more than just the kitchen, but it's all very interrelated.
So will you do anything for an event? I mean, do people ask you outrageous stuff and you just, your job
always
is to say yes? Do you always say yes?
No.
For the right price?
No. Yes, there's definitely, we try our best to accommodate everybody's needs. We want them to have a good party. I mean, that's what they're paying us for, but there is definitely a dollar amount associated with it, and we're really flexible on the range too, because we have pizza. We can do something more casual, or we can go the other extreme and do something more formal. So it's just about shooting in the middle and finding what the client wants.
Do you ever get requests to have monkeys at the party?
No, but this happened before my time. But there was a child's birthday party apparently out here in the back garden where they did bring in a whole reptile show. And this woman has gotten in touch with us again. This same child is having yet another birthday. But I don't know about the reptile part of that. I'm hoping for not, but we'll
see. He's into something else now.
Do you want to change?
Yes, I think he's probably moved on.
Change your thing, Phil, to you hope every day is a reptile birthday?
Yes, please.
What's the most outrageous thing that, or request?
Probably from Patrick.
Yeah. It was very easy.
Daily.
I did take advantage of Roberta's catering for a wedding in the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
And
I also didn't get to go to that one.
Ryan was there and cooking the best cheeseburgers of all time with little bacon bits in them.
What is the most outrageous request? I don't know that we've had crazy requests. People, I feel like more than anything, we just sort of get sort of pigeonholed, and they are always surprised when we can do other things other than just pizza. We've done some really over-the-top parties where we've just been part of the mix. We've seemed to have gotten ourselves on a bat mitzvah circuit, which is always in New York City. These are elaborate affairs. These are way bigger than weddings any day. So those alone have just been sort of mind blowing
theme oriented.
Oh
usually.
Yes, and everyone's still really excited about food trucks. Even though we're not a food truck, we are just a mobile pizza oven. We still manage to be looped into that whole scene. So
it's like an open face food truck.
It's true.
So I think we're going to go to break right now.
Are we going to bring on Larry? Because we found out that Christina loves weather reports and has always secretly wanted to be a weather person. So
meteorologist.
No one focus. Better than a man who's in charge of like 800 trucks that are going to all 50 states, all from
Is
Omaha.
Is he a storm chaser?
We'll find out.
Oh, we'll find out when we get back.
I couldn't come back without having him on.
I start deep and I dive in an ocean of love. So blue in your eyes, washing my heart in you. I rise like a mushroom, an atomic cloud, a burning circle of life. No one, no one, no one seems to know.
Listening to Wild Hearts by Remy De La Roque.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Very nice. Hey, Brandon. Can he hear me, Liz? How does it work? I don't know much about technology. Well, you know, Alexis and the people at the Heritage always tease me for being old school about technology. But I think the cycles of the moon and the weather are absolutely the highest forms of, you know, galactic technology. So we have Larry Bokel on. I haven't been, they pushed me out, Larry, of doing this show. So I finally get back and I'm like, we got to call Larry. So thanks for agreeing to be on a Sunday.
Hey, thank you for having me, Patrick.
So Larry, we have Christina here, who's a chef of the Breslin, who you deliver whole pigs to 52 weeks a year and a bunch of other stuff. And she's a big uh-huh. weather fan. So can you tell us about the kind of what type of winter this has been and what it's meant to the highways and the truckers of the nation?
Well, it was interesting you brought up weather. I'm standing at a ski resort here in Iowa right now.
Wow.
Yeah, we got about 12 inches of snow a week ago, but it's in the 50s today, so it's all melting. But generally, in the way of transportation and the weather, until about 3 weeks ago with the New York and the Boston heavy snowfall, we haven't had any weather-related issues whatsoever through the end of 2014 and into early 2015. So it's been very favorable.
What kind of truck do you drive, Larry?
No, Larry's not.
Well, I'm the general manager of the company, and we run about 130 tractor trailers.
Uh huh.
So we have all makes and models that we run across country, all 48 states.
I want to get a tractor trailer one day. So what is there a brand that you think is the best?
Well, generally, most of the rental companies at least semi-trailers run with Freightliners. You know, in my mind, they use them because they're the most fuel efficient, and maintenance-wise, they're the least expensive, and they're the most common truck out there. So I would recommend a Freightliner.
And back to the weather thing. I mean, is there global warming? I mean, is there a change in weather? Has it gotten worse in these past years? I mean, how long have you been in the industry?
Well, I've been in the industry for 40 years now. And really, most states have improved the process on how they plow and putting down brine prior to ice and snowstorms. So, and then the radar and the DOT websites that give us road conditions updated immediately really helped in the transportation industry. So we're generally hunkered down before storms exist. We pull into truck stops to stay where we're at. So on the highway, we've had minimal issues because we're well prepared in advance with all the notifications we get nowadays.
And then I had another question from Phil here about CB handles. What are the best CB handles you ever heard of, or some of the funniest ones? Because we've told us a lot over the years.
I was going to ask that question, but I forgot what that was called.
We should come up with some for ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the driver's handle, and they generally use CBs in the past to communicate from one truck to another.
Now they just
and that's
text.
Pretty much gone by the wayside. Cell phones are used for notification, and drivers use Sirius radio much more any day now that they don't rely too much on CB radio communications.
Oh, that's a bummer.
So what was it? Did you have a handle even though you were at the hub?
No, but you know the movie Smokey the Bear and Smokey the Bandit and, and Burt Reynolds, you know, those guys back in those days, everybody had a handle and, you know, they had, like, the police were called the Bear. The bear in the air was a policeman in an airplane or a helicopter, and tanker trailers that haul liquid were called motion lotion transporters, and car transporters were called mobile parking lots. So there was a name and a handle for pretty much everything back in those days.
Larry, are you a fan of the movie Convoy?
Oh, yeah. It actually, G.W. McCall, Convoy, was from Omaha, and that's where I live.
Really? Wow.
McCall started the Convoy, right?
I'm actually from Wichita, and that used to be my favorite movie. I used to love the movie Convoy. Uh-huh. I thought it was so cool.
Who's in Convoy?
Jerry Lee. Who else is in Convoy, Larry? The guy Jerry Lee.
Oh, geez, I don't know. I'm old, but I don't remember anymore.
It's all the best people.
There you go.
Well, very cool, Larry. Well, thanks for checking in. And next time I come back in 3 or 4 weeks, we'll have you back always because it's fascinating to hear this stuff. As I always like to say when Larry is on, look around your house or on your plate or in your place of work. Name one thing that has not been on a truck. It's almost impossible. So thanks for being on, Larry. That's exciting.
You're welcome. I'm going up the hill at snowboarding. You guys enjoy your day.
Me too, Larry.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. What was the Patrick Swayze trucker movie? Wasn't there one with Patrick Swayze? Does anyone remember that?
We must have the internet somewhere.
Isn't that just Roadhouse? And that was just
Let's take but the American Trucker's a hero in all of this, so please let's take a moment to sing the Trucker's driver's song. Once upon a time, that anthem was Dave Dudley's smash 6 Days on the Road. Later, Convoy, a 1970s novelty tune that rode on the fad of CB culture, was a number one smash.
Rubber Ducky, yeah.
Pigpen, this here's Rubber Duck, and I'm about to put the hammer down. CB lingo is the Yiddish of the open road. The 70s also saw a spate of movies that romanticized truckers as outlaws, from the classic White Line Fever to the Smokey and the Bandit series, and Chuck Norris's entry, Breaker Breaker, which teased, he got a CB radio and 100 friends who might just get mad.
Wow.
Quick excerpt from the Carnivore's Manifesto.
I was just thinking, CB's the original tender and grinder. Anybody care to comment? I get so lonely out here on the road.
Yeah, and we're back to Valentine's Day.
You know, pre-sexting going on. That was actually a big usage of the CB radio. They used to have, like, women at
and drugs.
Some heavy breathing, heavy breathers on the road.
Yeah.
And drugs and everything else.
Truck stops are a real thing, I guess.
Still around.
Has the truck diner culture gone down?
I guess, you know, with fewer long-term career truckers. I wonder if truck stop dining has decreased in quality.
It's probably been replaced by, you know, Starbucks and, you know, all the corporate. Yeah, you know, I get sad when I do road trips now because it's like, you know, there's all the outlet malls and, you know, just like a West Virginia is still pretty raw, though. I still love West Virginia.
Have you guys seen the country? I know people go to France and Italy and study cooking and this and that, but have you seen the true country? I mean, what places have you been to that are kind of, I guess, exotic within America or unusual?
I traveled... Well, I grew up in Florida, so that's exotic.
Where in Florida? Where in Florida?
I grew up on the Gulf Coast, south of Tampa.
Awesome. I'm from West Palm Beach.
Oh, right on. Across the way.
From Naples.
Oh, that's right. We've had this conversation. And then I went to undergraduate school in Georgia. And then I moved immediately out to San Francisco. And I traveled via multiple trucks, actually, because they kept breaking down from Georgia to San Francisco. And took a really awesome tour through the southern route and then up through California. I don't know what was super exotic. I mean, New Orleans was always super fun. Parts of Texas were crazy. I love New Mexico. I have some very deep connection there. I met a number of friends once living in San Francisco that grew up in various parts of New Mexico, and so I've traveled there many times for their weddings and whatnot, and gotten to explore it. I don't know. I feel a touchstone there. And the food is also amazing. It's so connected to Mexico, but as a very American side of it as well. I don't know. California, Nevada, also weird and crazy in their own ways.
Nevada's weird.
Just so weird. That's just like Reno.
Carson City. Reno. Everywhere in Nevada is just like weird and awesome and trashy at the
Definitely.
Same time.
Definitely, yeah. It's good.
What year were you in Atlanta?
I was in Atlanta. I was in Athens.
Mm-hmm. Or Georgia, yeah.
I was there a really long time ago. You're going to make me date myself. I was there between 90 and 94.
Really? Yeah. I lived there in 98 and 99 in Atlanta.
Oh, right on.
I love the Georgia food scene.
Yeah, and Georgia's really underrated as a state, just sort of geographically. It's so beautiful there. Mm. It's really, really pretty.
Yeah, love it. Savannah. Love Savannah.
Yeah.
All the hanging moss.
Oh, my God. Yeah, really beautiful.
Savannah's going to be the next Charleston, for
What's
sure.
that?
Savannah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's due. It's happening, I think.
North Carolina, too. I love North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, I miss the South. I know I'll never live there again, but I do love going back to visit. Yeah. There's a lot of... Unsung things.
Love the food, hate the people. No, just kidding.
I love the South. I love the people. Louisiana is my state.
I love half the people. I love half the people.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't been back to New Orleans since Katrina, so I think it's quite a different world than it was when I went. But, it always sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely changed.
It's fun, yeah.
I've had some great times in Louisiana, like unexpectedly. Like I broke down on the side of a swamp once and just got so much, like not even in
your airboat.
In my airboat, you know, prop stop working. But it was just like, I remember I had the strangest conversation with some woman. I was at the mechanic and the office manager for the mechanics, and we were just talking and food came up and talking about food. And she just looked like this normal, you know, kind of city woman, and then all of a sudden just like started talking about like cooking squirrel and possum and armadillo, and I didn't know, but you have to crab boil armadillo before you grill it to kill all the pests. It's like
that
it
seems
really
about,
is
right.
You didn't know that
that recipe.
What?
I know.
Come
shame
on,
shame on me. I did not know that. But it still is like, I don't know, I think Louisiana is just one of those like insane crazy places that stuff still exists. I don't know where else, you know, that culture still is.
Well, it's probably not publicized.
Armadillo?
It's probably, you know, backwoods of everywhere.
Yeah. Well, just that there is, like, still a strong backwoods culture. Is that, like, is that rude? Backwoods?
I think that's
city right now.
I actually, after Katrina, my little brother helped set up a nonprofit. So I was in this, do you know, have you guys heard of HOMA? HOMA County? I guess, mm-hmm. You know, it's a Native American tribe. And I was there for 2.5 months. But it was pretty intense with the culture and the food. It was amazing, though. Actually, to this day, I think maybe top three food moments of my life. There was a little place called Big Owls, and it was just kind of like a fry shack. And, you know, it's after Katrina, so there wasn't a lot of business. So me and my little brother and the volunteers would eat there almost every day. And we kind of like, you know, according to him, we kind of helped him stay in business. And one day he brought us out he's like, this is very special. And it's just for me and my brother. We got a half of a po' boy each, but it was soft shell crawfish.
Ooh,
which
yum.
To this day, I've never heard of it, never seen it, but I guess you just have to, like, they're molting and it's just the right day.
Yeah.
And then you just pick each one out. So you just handpicked all these soft shells and then deep fried them, like, whole. And it was, so fucking good.
I love
Pardon my language, Patrick.
You got so you helped save their business by eating half of a po' boy?
No.
Times are hard on the boulevard down there.
No, I know. We got the po' boy for free, and then we were eating like averaging 15 to 20 catfish po' boys a day that we paid for, yeah. How about you, Christina? Do you have any affinity for any food cultures outside of New York?
Yeah, lots. I'm a... adore Spain and Spanish food and, you know, jamón and all that kind of stuff.
It's my favorite cuisine, yeah. Above Japanese or French.
It's right there.
I
Japanese
love Northern
right
Spanish.
Basque. I've been lucky to be there twice and ate very, very well. And
any dishes that you love?
Man, there's so many. You know, just, I mean, for me, I think a visceral food moment, which is not even in Spain, but I got a chance to cook a pata negra in Portugal before and, you know, just got to this vineyard in Portugal and there was just like a refrigerator full of, you know, black pigs and it was kind of incredible and delicious.
You would find me passed out on the floor with the refrigerator still open, just, you know, bones and eyeballs everywhere.
But yeah, I've been very lucky. I've gotten to eat very well.
How about in the United States? Is there any regional cuisine that you kind of
regional United States? I mean, I don't know. I'm Italian. I'm American, so Italian-American seems to be something that I gravitate towards.
Mozzarella, prosciutto.
Yeah, and, you know, growing up in Philadelphia and definitely, like, you know, there's a strong South Philly component to my life that I do adore, going to the Italian market. It's very, very specific if anybody has ever been there and very, very unique. You know, you don't find that, like, drums of newspaper and fire on the streets, people... selling vegetables all year round, no matter how cold it is, and, you know, old butcher shops, and I don't know. That's kind of, I think, what I gravitate towards.
You know what I kind of love is the Chinatown in Philadelphia. I saw for the first time ever, I spent time in Philadelphia last year, and I just kind of happened upon Chinatown. It's like, it's just, I don't know what it is, but there's something I love about the Chinatown in Philadelphia.
Good. It's good.
Like, small and
it's not as crazy.
But
it's not, you know, you can cover more ground a lot
it's
easier.
It's almost more refined in some weird way.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah.
I don't get back nearly as much, but...
How about you, Patrick?
Well, it's funny. You eat better on the coasts than you do where most of the food is produced, you know, in the inner part of the country. My favorite places to eat in... Well, you know, Chicago, I don't particularly love as a town. I mean, the Midwest, I don't know.
What cities do you hate eating in?
Start with Vermont.
Vermont. Terrible cuisine. And it's because they have a wealth of riches when it comes to ingredients. Yeah. So that when you put and no particular history either. So then someone opens a restaurant there and they're like, we're a Pan-Asian Brazilian Spanish restaurant. I'm like, no. That's impossible and wrong. You cannot be all those things. They're like, oh, we just put some pork in a dumpling over some rice pilaf.
That's what's
and
going on.
Wrap
there.
It up in a burrito.
Some, I have no idea.
Marinate shrimp and maple syrup.
There should be like a Joe Beef in Vermont. You know, like a patio cochon. Like it seems like that's where all the cattle is. That's maple. Like all the.
Joe Beef is probably on my short list of like three restaurants if I could eat it anywhere in the world. I want to eat at Joe Beef so bad. No, I want to.
I can't believe I haven't.
I got to go last year, 2013. I went with a couple of my pals from here at Roberta's. We took the train up. Yeah, it was amazing. It was really fun. And we actually ended up, and now they have like... three restaurants and they're all in a row.
Do they have nap rooms? And just every time I read the menu or see something about it, I just think like, I'm going to eat there. And then I just like go ahead to like, okay, getting the bill and just like,
Yeah, no, I didn't notice any nap rooms, no. But we definitely took a lot of doggy bags.
What'd you eat there?
We did eat horse. That's the big thing that everyone thinks that you need to try when you go to Canada because it's legal. And it was really good. It was just really, really, it was just braisy. It just was like a braised meat. It, you know, it wasn't so distinctive. But it was really good. We had the foie gras double down, which is like the thing. Yeah. And it's insane. It's just insane. Like there, it's so, such a caricature of food, you know, in general, like they're so over the top. I suspect that even a pied de cochon is even worse in the overdoing it department. I didn't get to go there, but it's all in the same vein, in the same way that M. Wells is following suit with all of that.
I think Joe Beef just looks fun too, though.
Yeah, they're like good guys. Like... I got to meet the chefs. They were super fun. And, mm-hmm. and ended up also, randomly, another former employee of Roberta's was working at one of the three restaurants. But they're literally all connected. They can like
who was it?
Lacey.
Lacey?
Yeah, we ran into Lacey. I know. And now she's back in New York. But it was really super fun. Yeah, exactly. Beautiful Lacey. But yeah, it ended up being a super fun trip, even though it was like 9 degrees the entire time we were there.
We should be allowed to eat horse here. A lot of horses suffer because we can't eat them as food.
Is it illegal to eat horse?
Yes.
I had no idea. I thought it was just culturally frowned upon. I didn't realize it was illegal.
Wasn't it M. Wells that tried to put it on the menu, and
there was like a horse tartare, yeah.
Yeah, but, well, he was getting it from Canada, I believe. Yeah.
It's illegal because people love horses in this country, and so the way they make rules that end up hurting horses because they end up dying in fields unattended because no one can even get a few cents to have them die more civilized manner. I think some slaughterhouses are opening again, finally, state by state.
When I was a kid, I remember having a horse in Italy because that's pretty common culturally to eat horse, and I understand that here it isn't. Common and we like them too much to eat them, but
it is actually illegal.
Huh.
I only tried it once, but it was went to this. It's called the Viking Hotel in outside of Reykjavik, and so the thing is, it's like, I thought it was going to be really cheesy, like kind of like Epcot, but it's really it's actually this place. So the guy is really serious. It's where the International Viking Conference comes, and they actually take it really seriously. Like they really are obsessed with Viking culture. So I got horse, but they serve it exactly how Vikings would eat it. And it had no salt, no flavor, and it was more than well done. And it was, like, inedible. And I kind of, like, you know, without being a dick, I kind of complained about it. And they're like, no, well, this is how they would eat it. So, no, you can't send it back.
Did you call them Yahoos?
Yeah, I said, Yahoo! Yeah.
What, wasn't Yahoo the horse race in Gulliver's Travels?
Nerd alert.
Yahoo! I don't know. I never read Gulliver's Travels. I never even saw the movie. Sorry.
Never even the movie. No, I think the Yahoos. That was the name for the horse.
I don't remember Gulliver's Travels. I haven't read or remember it since I was like a
I wish
kid.
There was some way we could find out right now. If there was some sort of device we could fact check.
It just doesn't exist, though. That's, you know, how do you find anything out?
Maybe we could phone in Larry. I bet he could.
Yeah. Yes, I bet Larry has the answer.
All right, get Larry back on the line.
Well, what else?
Should we move on to eating other animals? Like, has anyone had panda bear or Komodo dragon?
I've had monkey.
Really?
Monkey brains.
Monkey, you didn't expect monkey.
Was that
brains.
At one of the bar mitzvahs?
Sacrificial monkey.
No, I'm sure that's not kosher.
A lot of people are surprised to know that Komodo dragon tastes a lot like bald eagle.
You don't expect that because one is on land and one flies. Yeah. Every time I hear monkey brains, I think of one Indiana Jones, but then also Clue, which is the best movie ever.
Yeah, I had it in Hong Kong. I had a lot of weird things in Hong Kong. I have actually a list of weird things I had in Hong Kong. I was traveling with someone who grew up there, and their father had a lot of weird connections, and I didn't speak any Chinese and was pretty ignorant to all of it. And I'd also dabbled in being a vegetarian for the couple years prior to this trip. And I decided when I went, I was like, I'm not going to be a vegetarian, at least for this trip. I mean, I want to try things. I'm adventurous. And I had some things. There are some things that I didn't find out until afterwards. They couldn't, my friends that
I like
could
that
speak,
your voice is like cracking just a little bit in the memory.
It was the first actual piece of meat I ate since being vegetarian. And
monkey was?
No, this it was an endangered species, I found out after the fact. They couldn't even translate the exact animal because they didn't, I don't know, they're Chinese to English.
Because it was a sheep, but it
was
really
probably like squirrel or something, like something in that department. But it was in, put in this crazy stew. But yeah, I was felt very like high afterwards. Like, I think it was just part of the eating meat after not eating meat kind of thing. But
I love it. Most people break their vegetarian thing with, you know, like a little nibble of bacon, but you went to Hong Kong and ate monkey brain.
And then I did have monkey brain soup that, I didn't know anything going into it. I might have probably backed off if I had knew what I was eating. Maybe. I don't know. I was fairly open. But yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. So I learned some things.
Christina,
it was an interesting trip.
Do you have any weird food experiences?
You know, woolly mammoth, jerky a few times, and... No.
They actually, do you know that that's a true story? Somebody did try woolly mammoth. They found I think it was like 10 years ago, they found one completely encapsulated in like, you know, just sub-zero ice.
Yeah, and
they thawed it out, and then they had, you know, it's like thousands of pounds. So they actually cooked up a piece of it.
Whoa.
Just
yeah,
for
that was
fun.
Actually Christina.
And is it a lot
that
like
was
horse?
Me.
Yeah,
exactly.
Meteorologist, archaeologist.
And it's on the menu at Joe Beef.
And it's on the...
All right. I just want to say thank you guys so much for coming in on a Sunday.
Yeah, our pleasure. It was fun
hanging out with
us. It was
us.
Such a treat to see Patrick as well.
This is amazing. I mean, I hope did I cramp your guys' new emerging style?
Yeah.
Patrick, we are here to learn from the master. The man that has 222 episodes under his belt.
That's true. I was the first to 200, and I'll be the last to 300.
All in spirit. Thank you guys so much, and any last words?
I guess check me out at Momo Sushi Shack, Breslin.
Yeah, Breslin.
And
Roberta's.
And if you have a bar mitzvah and you need monkey brains, you know who to talk to. Yeah.
And don't forget about the benefit this coming up for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, check out 108 Lives or Fine and Raw for details about that. And then if you go on 108 Lives, you can also see on their Facebook page. You can see pictures of me playing with orphans in Kathmandu, which I know everybody's going to rush to do that. Yeah,
absolutely.
You should include that on your Twitter, bro.
Twitter,
Tinder, Twitter. Yeah, I can't.
That's very old school technology.
By the way, I run
your
social
CB
media.
Handle.
Yeah,
check all out our CB handles.
Happy Sunday, guys.
Happy Sunday.
Thank you.
Hi, Jordan.
The theme song for the main chorus is I Never Had by Breedlove and Chufu.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.